celebrate and remember in this season of Advent? Most of the season, this coming of Christ that we're remembering is his coming at the end of the ages, in power, in light, visible to all the peoples of the world, his coming at the end of time. We ask ourselves, what does that mean? Second coming of Christ. In this case, what I mean is his present coming. His present coming into our hearts to be born through the gift of the Spirit, to be manifested in our lives, lives that are filled with charity, faith, hope. We ask ourselves again, how is Christ coming into our hearts? How are we preparing the way in our hearts Jesus to come? Now, and only now, on this last Sunday of Advent, is the third coming of Christ remembered and emphasized. And this might come as a surprise for us, because so often we speak of Advent as this countdown to Christmas. But in the liturgical year, it's only this last Sunday forward, especially to the nativity of Christ, his first coming. The third coming that we're remembering right now, but his first coming into history as a baby born to Mary. So as I say, along the way, we have heard again and again about Christ coming. This year, of course, it hasn't been hard to imagine the end of the world. As I've said over and over, we only have to look at the headlines or tune into the news to hear once again how COVID-19 has changed our world, has upended the way we do things, has meant an end in so many ways to our world as we thought this time last year, the kinds of procedures that we would become familiar with, of masking, distancing, sanitization, quarantine. And I guess I need not dwell on these things, because I've dwelt on them before, and in fact, we dwell on them every day, don't we? It is the end of the world. It hasn't been hard to imagine in this season. This year in particular, the way the Sundays fall on the dates of December, we get an opportunity to remember the saints and show us the way that point to Christ, what it means to follow in their particular ways, the way of Jesus, and how we can look to their way and ask what it means to follow in our particular way. So as I say, December, this year is unique because Sunday was December 6th, St. Nicholas Day. And we talked about St. Nicholas on that day, how he is a model of generosity and care for those who are overlooked. The girls who didn't have a dowry, children everywhere. St. Nicholas shows us the way of Christ that involves generosity. Ask ourselves, how are we manifesting generosity in our lives? A week later, on December 13th, last Sunday, we got to remember Lucia, the saint of light, whose day, December 13th, used to be reckoned as the shortest day of the year. And so it wasn't a surprise that a saint whose name meant light should be remembered on this day. Thought about Lucia and how she modeled hope, those candles burning bright, also along the way, John the Baptist, the prophet and the witness to Christ, who always pointed the way in everything he did. He said, I am not the Messiah. I am not the one you're looking for, but he is coming. And so we could ask ourselves how we too could be people of strength and power like John. How we too, in that very strength and power, can still come already in the baby Jesus. John the Baptist, our model for fearless truth-telling. Which brings us to today. Today, at last, as we come close to this season of the Nativity, we remember Mary, the mother of our Lord, the mother of God, as she's called, has been known in the church. Day as we sang her song, celebration and joy, the Magnificat. We're going to come back to that in just a moment. Now, we're familiar with Mary, I think, in many ways. We think of Mary from countless children's pageants, right? Mary, the girl who is so cute and wonderful up here in the front, gets to cradle that baby, Jesus. Mary, we think of as a model of a nurturing love, maybe. Mary, sometimes we think of and we remember her status as a young girl. I was reading what Martin Luther had to say about Mary because you might remember that Mary was especially beloved to Luther. And this sometimes comes as a surprise to Lutherans today. Because we have all but forgotten the remembrance of the saints, including Mary. Which is really sad because Luther himself treasured the figure of Mary and what she could be to him, what she could teach him, teach the church. In some parts of the Lutheran church today, we are learning to remember the gifts that Mary brings, and the gifts indeed that all the saints bring, that we left behind us in some of the excesses of the medieval church. So I was reading what Luther had to say about Mary, and he said, I think that Mary was probably an orphan, 13-year-old, let's say, girl, just marriageable age, an orphan. And when the angel Gabriel came to Mary, Luther said, I imagine she was at work. Luther was very bold in this because in the legends of the time, Mary was she was given a family. She was the daughter of Anna and Joachim. And Mary was depicted in art as always serene and reading a book, perhaps, as Gabriel comes to visit her. But Luther was very swept all that aside. He said, no, I think that Mary may have been an orphan girl. Because the Bible doesn't mention anything about her parents. And as we know, the Bible is very concerned to mention genealogies and lineages. So if it doesn't mention it, Luther said, it's well to imagine her as an orphan. And so that picture of Mary has come down to us often today. We remember her status as an outcast. A young girl in a time that didn't value women in a culture women were property. A pregnant young woman in a culture where that would have been deeply shameful, where she may even have faced the death penalty were it known, were she not married. And so we remember her status and we celebrate that God comes to her. We don't always remember Mary as a prophet of strength. Perhaps the prophet of the greatest strength and the greatest might that there has ever been. The prophet who gave birth to God out this song overflows from her heart with prophetic message, the Magnificat we sang today. Mary is a prophet of strength and power. Luther, back to him for just a moment, he said, Mary believed the word that the angel gave to her. Mary believed. And Luther says there are three wonders here. One, that God should become man. Another, that a virgin should bear a child. The third, that Mary believed. And this is the greatest of the three. Mary's belief. And then the prophetic power that flowed from that belief, Luther considered the greatest miracle of all. This sometimes comes as a surprise, because in our age we make a lot of the fact that God became a human being. What a wonder, what a miracle. But you have to understand that in the ancient world that wasn't very much of a miracle. Gods took on human form all the time. And no Roman or Greek would have ever blinked an eye to hear that God became human. Zeus did that. Jupiter did that. Mercury was known to do that. Okay, it's pretty impressive, but it's not a really big miracle. And Luther picks up on that. Yeah, that's a miracle, but it's not the biggest one. Maybe bigger for Luther is that a virgin should bear a child. Once again, a surprise in our era. Because in some parts of the church we say that's everything, that a virgin should have born a child. There is the miracle of miracles. Once again, in the ancient world, no big deal. Because a lot of great kings were said to have virgin births. Julius Caesar, for example, Cyrus, the Persian. Virgin births happened as well. But the third miracle, Luther says, is that Mary believed, and that is the greatest of the three. That by God's grace, she should have awoken faith in her heart and been empowered to believe this wondrous gift of God. So I'd like to turn to this Magnificat, this song that exploded from Mary's heart. Because in this Magnificat, Mary gives us, again, a way to live into the way of Jesus, models for us, and invites us into this same word of power. These are words of power that are given to us to reflect on today. There are three dimensions here we'll talk about. My soul proclaims the greatness of the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God my Savior. My spirit rejoices. I think that's maybe the first great miracle of the Magnificat. What Mary says is that the way of Jesus is a way of joy, a way of rejoicing. This may come as a surprise again to many of us who grew up in the Christian faith, or many who are outside of the Christian faith, whose experience has been one of a faith that is about rules, that the Christian way is a way of sternness, a way that lays shame and blame if you stray. Many have been wounded. And that includes those in the church and those who have left the church. They've said, we don't want any part of that way. We're looking for something else. We have an instinct that the way should be different than that. And Mary says, yes, it is. The way of Jesus is the way of rejoicing. Remember again who says this, back to Mary, the unwed pregnant girl, vulnerable in her culture, subject to shaming and blaming and possibly death. But still she chooses joy. Still a song of joy springs up in her heart at the call of the angel. What this says to me is that joy and gratitude are choices that we can make. It doesn't depend on our outward circumstances, whether we are going to be a joyful or a miserable person. It doesn't depend on what's going on in our lives. This is not how we actually usually operate. Usually, in our relationships, we say, if that person wasn't being so mean or angry or doing such stupid things, then I wouldn't be so unhappy. But joy is a choice. It comes from inside. It doesn't depend on what others do or say around us. Joy can be rooted in this experience of God's presence, God's love. Again, it doesn't depend on circumstances. We think that sometimes, name anything, COVID conditions that we're living with, unemployment, canceled surgeries, loneliness, these things that are very real, and I don't want to downplay them. But we can have joy in the midst of them. I knew a man on the streets of Vancouver. He was homeless. And whenever I saw him, he was singing a song. He was humming. He had a smile on his face. And there is no question that he suffered greatly. He dealt with all kinds of challenges that I can barely imagine in his life. But still, when I would talk with him, he would say, I am so blessed. I'm blessed by my friends. I'm blessed I had a place to sleep last night. I'm blessed. Here's a man who miraculously was able to choose joy. For Luther, the greatest miracle of all. I've known people in hospice who are dying or suffering, who are in pain. And they say, Pastor, I'm so blessed by the love of my family, by the care of the staff in this place. I'm so blessed. And they don't just mean looking back on a life well lived, although that is part of it. They've been blessed their whole life through. They mean in this moment right now, I feel blessed. Blessing, gratitude, joy are experiences that Mary had as an unwed pregnant girl in her culture, and that we can have too. My soul proclaims the greatness of the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God my Savior. There's Mary's first word of power to us, the first gift of the Magnificat. Here's the second. For you, Lord, have looked with favor on your lowly servant. From this day, all generations will call me blessed. Listen to that. You have looked with favor on your lowly servant. Mary knows that God's gaze is favorable. It is loving. It is filled with delight. Joy. Many people struggle to know this. They feel that God is angry or judging or disappointed in them. I saw a book on the shelf as I was Christmas shopping one day in the bookstore. And there's a book there called God is Disappointed in You. And it was meant as a humorous take, but it was actually also meant as a serious take on the stories of the Bible. It was a telling of the whole Bible. And the conclusion of this author from reading the Bible from cover to cover is that God's character and nature is to be disappointed in you. What a tragedy. What a sadness that was to read, to hear. And yet that author was also just calling into the open many people's experience. It was satirically meant in that way, to show us, to expose the true attitude that many of us carry in our heart of hearts, that God is disappointed with us. It's been our experience sometimes from other Christians that God is angry or judging. We struggle to know what Mary proclaims so clearly. Look with favor on your lowly servant. From this day, all generations will call me blessed. Now, Mary is sometimes portrayed as meek and passive, docile. And maybe she's even sometimes criticized for that. The angel Gabriel comes to her, and all she says is, or seems to say, is, "Well, may it be with me according to your word." Mary seems to be an anti-feminist icon. But I don't hear it in this word of power from her. This is a word of a young girl who is filled with a passionate and a confident love. She knows deeply that God is with her, that God's love surrounds her, and that is in spite of any circumstance of her life. She's passionate and willing to lay her life on the line for this message of joy that she knows she carries within her. Mary is powerful, and she gives us this gift too, to remember that God's gaze is favorable. For you, Lord, have looked with favor on your lowly servant. From this day, all generations will call me blessed. Can that be our word as well? Can that be our prayer of our heart too? Here's the third and perhaps the mightiest gift of the Magnificat, and it really flows from the first two gifts. As joy wells up within us, as the confidence of God's love flows through us, or through Mary, let's say, she sings this song, the next words, "You have shown strength with your arm and scattered the proud in their conceit, casting down the mighty from their thrones and lifting up the lowly. You have filled the hungry with good things and sent the rich away empty." Those are words of incredible power, and they have worked change and revolution through history. God's vision is for a world definitely not returned to normal, as I spoke about a week or two ago in a sermon. God does not wish for a return to normal, but instead, God's vision is for a world remade and revitalized and renewed. What begins with the child in Mary's womb is God's great reset of the world. God's reset of the world. Mary sings this song of prophetic power, where the mighty are cast down from their thrones, and it's a fearful vision. It's a fearful vision in this world. If you're one of the mighty, if you feel that you might be one of the proud, God is going to set all the proud back, cast down the mighty. But isn't it also a vision that draws us, that compels our imaginations? A world where kings and presidents are treated no different said that the prophets are always mixing up their verb tenses. They can't get it right, what has actually happened, what's happening, and what will happen in the future. And Mary speaks like one of the prophets. She proclaims this word and this world as if it already is. Mary can't tell the difference. She's so on fire with love, gratitude, and joy that for her, the world will be this way. She's caught this prophetic imagination, this vision. A human society of shalom, justice, peace. So she sings her song. You know, this song is so powerful that it has been regularly banned by authoritarian regimes in the world. Did you know that the British in India banned this song from being sung in churches? An authoritarian regime that was holding on to power at the expense of a vast, vast majority of people. In Guatemala in the 1980s, these dictators held on to power again at the expense of people. In Argentina, as people were disappearing, and their mothers would gather in the square, and they would sing this song, until the powers that be banished it from being sung. So threatening was it to the way that things were in their world, the status quo that the powerful wanted to hang on to. This is a revolutionary song. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, our modern Lutheran saint, who, as we know, was a pastor in resistance to the Nazi authoritarian regime, 1940s, he said, "The Song of Mary is the oldest Advent hymn. It is at once the most passionate, the wildest, one might even say the most revolutionary Advent hymn ever sung. This is not the gentle, tender, dreamy Mary whom we sometimes see in paintings. This song has none of the sweet, nostalgic, or even playful tones of some of our Christmas carols. It is instead a hard, strong, inexorable song about the power of God and the powerlessness of humankind." Bonhoeffer, too, saw how revolutionary this song was. Mary's gift. Mary, the prophet of power, who filled the hungry with good things and sent the rich away empty. And that's the third great gift of the Magnificat. I'm going to conclude with words of Debbie Thomas, commentator on this text. She says, "The Magnificat is a song of too much hope." Of course it is, because too much hope is precisely what we're called to cultivate on this last Sunday of Advent. Can you do it? Can you find your voice and share it with a world more desperately in need now than ever? What does your Magnificat sound like this year? How is God magnified through your unique perspective and vision? What stories of divine favor do you have to tell? What glorious reversals do you see?